Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Face Connecticut on WTIC News Talk 1080, 96.5 TIC FM and Light 100.5 WRCH. Aaron Kupek with you this Sunday morning. Governor Daniel Malloy is preparing to leave office. We recently sat down with him for an exit interview.
You must be doing some reflecting on your tenure. What have you been thinking about?
Well, you know, listen, I got a lot of moving to do. I got to get out of a house and I got to get out of an office. I got to decide which books I'm going to keep and which books I'm going to give away. I think more to the point of your question, however, is, you know, I constantly take stock of where I am and what I've been doing and what we have, as an administration, has accomplished. We recently compiled a very full and detailed report of that. And I have to say, having read it, I was surprised, so everybody else should be.
What are you most proud of during your time as governor?
That we changed state government in so many ways, and that we kept all of our people pulling and moving in the same direction. We got everybody out of a silo. There's not, you know, we shrank the number of departments, we shrank the number of employees, we do more, we provide more services, we're more efficient than we've ever been. And what's really neat is we have clusters of commissioners working together on common goals when, you know, there were dividing lines. And when I moved into this office, there were clear dividing lines and people didn't work together.
Has it been a challenge, do you think, getting that word out? Do you think the average person on the street knows there are fewer state employees today than when you took office?
No, I don't think they know that. I don't think they know, you know, I think if you ask, this happened to me last Christmas. I was walking in the mall and some guy came up to me and said, you know, he started giving me a hard time. And I said, well, how many more jobs do you think, you know, I've created in state government? And, you know, he had some number in the thousands. And I said, well, the reality is that we've cut that number by 3,000. It's quite remarkable what we've been able to accomplish by investing in technology, by employee empowerment, by having, I would argue, better leadership on the commissioner level and deputy commissioner level, and holding those commissioners to very high standards. I think it's been remarkable, and it's one of the reasons that we rate of spending increase is substantially less than any of my predecessors on a 8-year basis, on any given 4-year basis. It really is quite remarkable.
Do you have any regrets, things left undone or things you would have done differently?
You know, regrets, I have a few, but too few to mention. I think that I would have liked to have done more. I would have, you know, if we moved the ball 50 yards down a 100-yard field, I wish we got to 55 or 60. But as a body of work, I'm very proud of what we've accomplished. You know, there are more private sector jobs in Connecticut today than when I took office. State government is smaller than when I took office. Crime is at a 50-year low. Our prison population has declined by thousands, and yet we were the leading state in decline of violent crime over a 3- and 5-year, 4-year period of time. One of the things I'm very proud of is the high school graduation rates are up very substantially, well beyond the national average. 7 years in a row of increasing scores. After 5 years, the immediate 5 years before I came into office, having seen declines in graduation rates. And by the way, we now know that those degrees are more valuable because we have a better testing system that measures what we're good at and what we're not good at. So, I mean, I'm not sure you could mention an area that's important to me that we did not make progress in.
What area would you say you're most proud of?
You know, I just reeled off a whole bunch of those, you know, ending chronic homelessness amongst veterans and homelessness amongst veterans, creating over 22,000 units of affordable housing in the state, leveraging $2.5 billion in investment in doing that. I wanted to shrink government, and I did, and I wanted to enlarge the private sector, and we did. I think the things that perhaps I'm most proud of is electric boats not going anywhere. The naval base isn't closing. Pratt & Whitney is here for decades to come. United Technologies, the bulk of it, are here for decades to come. Sikorsky Helicopters building a whole new type of helicopter that had only been manufactured or assembled in Florida. There's no assembly going on in Florida, and it's all happening in Connecticut. No one would have thought that was possible 8 years ago. And, you know, whether I get credit for it or not, I know people have jobs and will for the foreseeable future because we did those things.
The mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School 6 years ago certainly changed Connecticut. The state enacted on a bipartisan basis some of the toughest gun laws in the country. How did that change you as a person and how you do your job?
Well, before I answer that question, you said on a bipartisan basis. The first votes coming out of the special committee that was set up to act on a bipartisan basis didn't reach results. They were tied up in a knot. The speaker had committed to only doing things that could be done on a bipartisan basis. I think that was a failed concept, and that led to my campaigning in the state important gun measures. And yes, we got some Republican votes, but to call that a bipartisan effort, I think flies in the face of what was the reality, at least as late as March of that following year, 2013. What we ended up with is arguably the most comprehensive or second most comprehensive package of gun safety laws in the country. Certainly the most radically changed package of any state. And that was followed by continuing a substantial decline in homicides. We also took steps to protect women in domestic violence situations and the like. And that work has continued on an ongoing basis. In fact, it needs to, because the gun industry evolves on a daily basis. And we have to have our laws evolve to make sure that we're protecting people and keeping them as safe as we can. Your question about how did it change me? I mean, it was a very difficult time for me personally that day and days after. But that pales into comparison to losing a child or losing a loved one or even having a child who was unharmed in the school. I can't imagine what that was like. I had to deal with it for some number of hours and days. But there are people's lives who have been changed far more severely than anything I had to go through. I'm proud of how Connecticut came together, but that was not without some pushing and shoving.
Regardless of how people feel about your policies, I think even your critics would agree that you're a hard worker. What has driven you over these past 8 years?
The same thing that drove me all the years before that 8 years. I like to work. I like to be intellectually challenged. I like to be well prepared. And as my mother admonished me every single day that we had a conversation, I had an obligation to leave the world a better place for my having lived in it. And there is not a day in my life as a young adult or adult that I have not tried to do that. I think the way I was raised and the understanding of my personal obligation for the gifts that had been given me led me to work harder than most people in my line of work.
You've never been bashful about speaking out against the president and policies you disagree with. To what degree do you feel that national politics have maybe overshadowed policy objectives here in Connecticut?
Well, I mean, I think the Republican Party nationally and in Connecticut's in great peril. I would argue that party can no longer argue that they're the party of Lincoln. Now, Lincoln may have been a Republican, but that was nothing like what we see today. Lincoln would be appalled by this. The man who freed the slaves is in the same party as a man who jails children at a border and separates them, purposely separates them from their parents, and won't allow them to be reunited with family members within the country. I mean, this is really, he should be brought to The Hague. He should be charged with human rights violations because he is violating people's human rights. And that may be bad with an adult, but when you do it to a child, how does any Republican today call themselves a Republican if he's your standard bearer? And I think that the Republicans in the state got spanked by the public because they had many opportunities to distance themselves from the president, and they were too spineless to do that.
How do you feel about where the country is going?
How do I feel about after that, Mrs. Lincoln, other than that, how was the play? I mean, I think that our nation is in more peril than it's been at any time since the Second World War, which was in more peril than any time since the First World War, which was in more in peril than any time since the Civil War. I think it's more like the times that led to the Civil War, the late 1840s and early 1850s with the rise of the Know Nothing Party, anti-immigration, anti-religious freedom, anti-everything. There's some similarities. The Know Nothings denied realities and facts. We have a president who everybody knew was lying, and yet he got elected, and lying about fundamental and moral beliefs and behaviors, including paying off women who he had affairs with, and accepting help, we will soon have proof, from Russians to garner his election. I mean, how do you sell a house that you allowed to destroy itself for more money than you paid it in Florida by tens of millions of dollars? I wish I could invest that way. So I think that when we have someone like Donald Trump leading the nation, who argues to the American people that they can decide what the facts are, as opposed to understanding that facts are facts, and lies are lies, and things get made up, we're in great peril.
You're clearly a student of history. How has that helped you govern?
I think an appreciation for, I don't think you can have an idea where you want to go unless you fully appreciate where you've been and what has given rise to who we are and what we are as Americans. America rose to be the greatest nation in the world because we learned from our mistakes. Right now, we're repeating our mistakes. And that's what I mean to be our peril. The press is under attack. Fundamental civil and human rights are under attack. And we've created an environment where you don't have to know the facts, you just have to have an opinion about something. And that defines who you are, what you are, and what others should believe of you. I got to tell you, there's truths and there are falsehoods. There's a reality, and those things are undeniable unless you create an environment in which they are deniable. Whether that's in a novel or which is manageable, or real life, which is deplorable. I don't know.
You've pledged any help you can to the incoming administration. How is the transition process going, and how frequently have you spoken with Governor-elect Lamont?
Well, the governor and I have had discussions, and everybody who works for me has gone the extra mile. I mean, my transition was not very friendly, not because Governor Rell was in any way unfriendly, but the administration did not. Wasn't particularly helpful, forthcoming with information, with a few exceptions. I pledged to myself 8 years ago that when I was done, whoever got elected, Democrat or Republican, would have a better experience than I had. I think they will tell you, and they probably could answer it better, that they're feeling pretty good about the services we render, the information we've shared, the discussions we've had. I give a lot of credit to my chief of staff, who's done a lot of that. But all my commissioners have made themselves available, and we've shared information.
In the run-up to Election Day, how does it feel seeing yourself kind of being replaced? Is it liberating at all?
Yeah, it is. I'm absolutely ready for it. There'll be things that I miss. Don't get me wrong. I think the intensity of relationships and the ability to meet new people every day on the scale that I was pleased to do that over the last 8 years, really at the last 23 years, is really quite remarkable. So I think that I'll have to adjust to a different expectancy, right? I shouldn't expect as many interesting and exciting things to just take place. On the other hand, I'm looking forward to having a higher level of privacy. I'm looking forward to being alone in a car. I'm looking forward to going to a store where someone's not following me a few steps behind. I think the thing that I'm ready for, excited about, and maybe even mildly anxious about is the ability to be me to a higher degree than being governor will allow you to do.
When was the last time you've driven a car?
I drove one time after I was elected, and then more recently I've had a couple of practice drives. If you see me coming, get out of the way.
What's next for you?
Well, I go right back to work. I'm going to teach. I'm a Rappaport Fellow at Boston College Law School. It's a public policy institute that I'll be teaching at this next semester, and that starts a few days after I'm no longer governor. And I made a conscious choice not to pursue employment by a public company or private company during the time that I was governor, because I felt that would place them and me at ethical boundaries that I didn't want to test. So the nice thing about the fellowship is that I have a job, it pays me money through May, and now I can do the things I need to do to figure out what I'm going to do on a longer term basis.
Judging by a certain...
And that all starts at 12 noon on the 9th.
Not that you're keeping track
right, of it. No, well, I just want anyone who's listening to feel free to contact me.
Judging by a series of polls back in October, you are leaving office as one of the most unpopular governors.
I used to be the most, so it's better.
Why do you think that is?
Because I didn't care about being popular. If I had cared about being popular, I would have made completely different decisions, and they would have been the wrong decisions. And I wouldn't have led on issues the way I did, and that would have been wrong. I'll go back to what I said. My mother admonished me. I had an obligation to leave the world a better place. She didn't say you had to die more popular. She said you had to know that when you were dying or after you had left the world, that things you had done actually were positive. And she didn't mean one or two. She meant a lifetime.
You talk about unpopular decisions. Are there a couple that really stick out to you?
Sure. Education reform, prison reform, criminal justice reform, job reform in the sense of creating a toolbox that was competitive with other states, advocating spending more money on transportation. Literally everything, every major accomplishment. I mean, look at the grief that Republicans give me for having funded housing. I have heard Republicans take credit for ending chronic homelessness amongst veterans at the same time that they're on record as opposing the things I did to allow that to happen, which was creating thousands of units of new and additional housing opportunities in the state. I mean, it goes back to, people want credit for what's popular, or even what someone else had to expend some blood on, but it doesn't mean that they support that work having been done by that person.
Criminal justice reform in particular, you seem very enthusiastic about. Why is that? I mean, you're a former prosecutor. Is that part of it?
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. I learned more about society in the first 6 months I was a prosecutor in New York City than I had learned in the 25 years prior to that. society has made great mistakes. Many of those are around the issue of poverty and race. We treat people differently based on their zip code, their neighborhood, the color of their skin, or the size of their bank account. And all of that flies in the face of what our constitutional guarantees are and what our expectations of ourselves and others should be. So I have spent a lifetime, not perfectly, but a lifetime on a trajectory of trying to make society a fairer, more equal society, I guess is the best way to say it. You know, I frequently say about education reform, you know, we as Americans patted our back, patted ourselves on the back because we would say we have given opportunities of success. Well, we know that we can deliver success. We know that there are things that we could do that increase success levels very substantially. And yet we say, well, our only obligation is to give the opportunity. I redefine that. We should expect success, and we should build our schools and our educational system to guarantee it, at least amongst a much larger group of black, brown, and urban people and people in poverty. You know, I've done it. Not perfectly, but we've made progress.
Decades from now, how do you hope to be remembered as a governor?
I don't have any expectation that decades from now that anyone will know anything about me. Most politicians are forgotten within 5 years of having left office. So that's not my measurement. Everyone's coming up to me and saying, oh, you know, you will be fully appreciated in the future. I fully appreciate what I attempted to do in the present. And that's what counts. You know, I'm not the first governor. You know, I don't have any expectation with that. Now, if you go around this country and say who's a leader on pension reform and budgetary reform, my name will come up in another state. You go anywhere in this country and talk about criminal justice reform or corrections reform, my name will come up, or my administration's name will come up. If you talk about, say, educational reform on a college, a collegiate level, and a pre-K through 12 or pre-K alone, it'll come up. If you talk about modernizing government and investing in technology to do that, my name will come up. So, I mean, I know what I've accomplished, and I'm very comfortable in it, and that's why being popular was never important.
Will your name ever appear on a ballot again?
Probably not. I have no expectation of that happening. I'll probably appear in other people's political mail. I bet you there's a lot of Republicans in the state that wish they had spent more time distancing themselves from the president, or perhaps treating gay, lesbian, transgender individuals, black, brown, or poor people, or urban residents better. I bet you that's true in Greenwich and in Wilton and Norwalk and Danbury and other parts of the state.
Do you think the Republicans who ran against you in November misjudged?
Yeah. I knew, I'll go back to the year before the mayoral elections, where Republicans running for mayor or first selectman ran against me, and they got trounced. We had the largest turnover of any recent memory in local governments from Republicans to Democrats. And not just by a vote or two. I mean, this was overwhelming. And I knew when I went to sleep that night that we could elect a Democrat. As the governor. I wasn't sure that we had the candidate yet, but that we could do that. I also knew that when Themis or Fasano would not distance themselves from the president, they were committing not suicide because they got elected, but for their party they were doing that. And, you know, you deserve what you get, I guess.
Governor Daniel Malloy, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening to Face Connecticut. I'm Aaron Kupek. Enjoy the balance of your weekend.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.